Okay, and we are back. This is our, I think, fourth special program on Morgellons disease, Morgellons syndrome, Morgellons disorder, whatever it is. We don't know what it is. But many things have happened since our first program with Cliff Mickelson, Jan Smith, and a couple of other wonderful people. This disorder, this infection, whatever it is, and it's almost like another, well, we've talked about this so much. I hope you've heard the other programs. If you haven't, listen to them in the archives. It's almost as if this syndrome has a mind of its own and its own presence. Okay, what I wanted to point out, though, in this Morgellon story is that overseas, people are beginning to wake up. Yes, they're looking at America and saying, gee, something's going on over there. But what they don't understand is that something's going on all over the place. Here's a story to illustrate that from the Times Online in the UK. Medical experts in America are investigating a mystery epidemic with a sci-fi name, Morgellons, after hundreds of people have contacted internet sites, there's a typo there, claiming that they are suffering from it. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control has formed a Morgellons task force after receiving up to 20 calls a day from victims citing a range of alien symptoms, from joint pain to bowel trouble. So the story gets to be weirder and weirder the more you look at it from many different angles. But back tonight to talk about it, first up this evening is Cliff Mickelson. Welcome back, Cliff. We did? Wow. Okay, the alarm system in the studio may have bumped one of our phone lines. Cliff is there. Jan Smith is back with us tonight, so let's at least say hello to Jan. Hi, Jan.
Hi, how are you doing, Jeff?
Good. We're playing all kinds of electronic games tonight.
Well, I guess.
Yeah, but anyway. This story tonight, our special report, this is the fourth one, isn't it?
I believe so.
Yeah. Will involve you and some surgery you had recently. And folks, wait until you hear the details from Jan about what happened. We touched upon it, I guess, in a tangential way. The second program we did, maybe the first, but this just knocked me over, and I don't know how. You may have expected something like, let's not tell them yet, let's build the drama, but did you warn your doctors going in, let me just put it that way, that there might be something unusual?
Well, I had a knee surgery about a year ago, and I had the same doctor for that knee surgery as I just had. When I had my first knee surgery, I had mentioned this disease to him, and he, you know, shrugged it off like he was telling me, you know, I was telling him I had a hangnail. If he hadn't heard of it, obviously it didn't exist and was not important.
I gotcha. Okay.
The thing that changed during this knee surgery was that a doctor came onto the scene, probably a lot to do with listening to your program and just realizing the Morgellon situation. Someone volunteered their services to me. Mm-hmm. They heard us talking, and you had mentioned that you wanted to know if I was going to get a biopsy on this knee, since there were fibers found in the first knee that were never looked at.
Correct.
And to be honest with you, I approached some of the folks from Morgellons, and there were no takers. And I was just so fortuitous that a really well-known doctor came forward and said, I would like to do that for you.
Wonderful.
And at this point, they kind of have to remain nameless because it just seems like the forces of evil are working against everybody that's trying to do good things here.
I totally understand. Well, let's hold off. I want to tell the story in detail in a little bit.
Okay.
Are you there, Cliff?
I'm here.
You step out for a quick one?
Off the edge of the world, I think.
All right. Well, anyway, you're back. What I was talking about at the beginning of the program is that the foreign press is beginning to look at Morgellons a little bit. The Times Online, other papers in the UK, in Europe, South America, they're looking at it almost as if it's an American problem. But it's not. This is a worldwide situation. And tell us a little bit more. How many continents now are we dealing with well-known cases of Morgellons?
Every continent on planet Earth, Jeff.
There you go. It's one of those things where you see in the media, well, it's happening to them, but not us. So we'll talk about it, and that's how they're talking about it. But we're going to talk to a lady later on this evening from Australia who has been suffering from this nightmare syndrome, or whatever indeed it is. So since we last talked, Cliff, if you would bring us up to date.
Well, we've had several major media events that have come down on the mainstream media. As to their effect, I can't really say that at this point yet, because everyone in the mainstream, Jeff, still goes at this issue with the old, we don't believe it, there's a possibility you guys might, you know, be smoking gypsum weed or something, and just that whole nonsense that's...
Now, excuse me, are you telling me that the psychological diagnosis is still being applied with, I guess, some... It's common?
Well, they're going to try to beat the horse till the whip breaks, I think.
You got all kinds of good one-liners. That's a good one. Seriously, though, but there's still not any kind of unanimity on the simple fact that this is a very real, very hideous, and horrendous problem, and we don't know what it is. Now, the CDC, of course, has formed a task force, which always kind of scares me when I hear about that.
Oh, boy, you and me both.
Yeah, the CDC is notorious for covering up, hiding, and lying to the public about enormously important issues of health. And they have always done it because we know who controls and owns and operates the CDC. It's the big pharma and big medicine.
Yeah.
Real simple. But there was some kind of a, I don't know if you can talk about this, but wasn't there a direct contact with someone fairly high up in the CDC who had an interest in this Morgellon situation? I don't want to name any names here, but...
Well, recently there was, I don't know exactly what came of it.
I see.
There was a friend of ours down in New Mexico who made contact with, I believe it was the head of the CDC at the time.
Mm-hmm.
She was apparently speaking at a local high school, and he made personal contact with her, and she apparently feigned interest in the affair.
Ah, there you go. Send it to me at my home or whatever, that kind of interest.
Yeah. Here's a P.O. box, send it there.
Right. Right, okay.
To tell you the truth, Jeff, and I'll be quite frank about it.
Please do.
And here's the conundrum that we're in. We need to really, really understand what we're up against here. We need the resources and the skills of the mainstream. But, unfortunately, it's a catch-22 because past experience has proven that most of the mainstream, under the aegis of the CDC, can only be trusted as far as you can throw them.
If that far.
Yes.
I'm not being facetious. They are owned and operated mouthpieces of the powers that be.
Yes.
And that's all. We do not have access to the press in our country anymore, really. It's marginal. It's local, but it's not national.
You are right on the money.
And we don't, we just can't, what do we do? We've got the internet, we've got heroes like you and Jan and our other friends who have been on with us, and we have heroes who will never be on this program who are suffering with Morgellons and who will never be heard from, basically, outside even their own families. But we are working all together on this, and we're all part of the same team. Now, as far as medical progress, we've got our ace in Oklahoma. Is he still on the job?
Yes, he is.
All right. And we have anybody else coming in to help him? Have any of the more noble, I'm using that in quotes, medical institutions in this country stepping forward to say, hey, let's look at the data with you. What do you got? Is anybody doing that?
Institutions, no. Absolutely not.
A few individuals, and that's it.
Individuals. And once again, you come to the situation where you've got the white rose. You know, you've got a few people at the university that are going to dare to print pamphlets and say, you know, this is terrible what's going on in our country. I'm using the analogy of Germany.
Gotcha.
With the white rose.
Yep, I'm with you, yeah.
But you've got no institution or universities or anything else that'll stand behind those individuals, except for, of course, the folks at Oklahoma State, which I have to say have done a wonderful job. The dean there and a lot of the other doctors are 100%.
Okay, very good. Stand by, and we'll come right back with Cliff Mickelson. And we've got much to talk about. Okay, and we're back. Cliff Mickelson, since we began doing these programs with all the wonderful information of this horrible situation that you and Jan and others have brought forward on the program, where have we moved to? Have we moved forward? Have we moved sideways? Have we made progress? What has the net impact of all this effort been?
We have made progress. We've made progress, Jeff, at the grassroots level, which, in my estimation, is the most important place to really begin to build your foundation. You can only move as far forward as your carriage wheels will take you, and you need to have that, you need to have them on the wagon.
Right.
And that's what the grassroots is all about.
Right, right. Okay, so the response is good. How about people coming forward, identifying themselves or asking if they have Morgellons because they've got some problems that are similar, if not exact, to what we've all described on this program?
One of the things that has just kind of brought tears to my eyes in a way, when we finish our shows, Jeff, the last one we did last week and the others before that, I am deluged with emails from people saying, oh my goodness, this, thank you so much. This is what I've got. I just never knew what it was. Everybody thought I was crazy. My doctor said that he, you know, that not to come back, but thank you so much because of your appearance on the Rents radio show. I know now what it is I have. And then I can send them to the sites where they can fill in the blanks for themselves. And it's just been marvelous.
I see. All right. Medically, scientifically, we have Clifford Carnicom now involved with the research. And, of course, Clifford in my book is one of our heroes, truly a self-styled, self-made man of great intellect, great scientific acumen and brilliance. And his first paper on Morgellons is up on the Morgellons special feature at Rents.com, the first observations from Clifford Carnicom.
Yes, he's done a wonderful job. Clifford is just, it's hats off to him.
Where do we go next? Do any of the congressmen or women come forward and say, all right, Clifford, Jan, and you others, we're going to get to the bottom of this? Do they understand that the CDC is not going to stand up and do the right thing necessarily with respect to all the people infected until they have to? Do they understand any of this? Who is helping?
Well, I'm at this point resigned to, well, actually determined, I think is a better word, determined to continue to build the grassroots base that we need to actually force the attention that is required to address this affliction, because attempts to start at the top and work down have just been doomed to unbelievable amount of failure and resistance, overt hostility.
Mm-hmm.
I say that with the congressman, there's been who gets credit in my book is Dianne Feinstein down in California.
What did she do?
Well, you know, people can say what they might about her, but she took the time to actually write a letter for all the good that it may have done. It did bring a lot of comfort to people that are suffering, because she wrote to the CDC and said, hey, what the heck's going on down there in Georgia? Wake up down there. And that, and along with a few other things, I finally, at least grudgingly, got them to acknowledge that they might consider the possibility of thinking about this disease.
Okay, I think it, at this point, maybe a question of waiting until someone in the Congress comes down with this.
Yes, yes, you got it. That was my very next thing I was going
to
say.
No, I hate
to
say it, but
Jeff, you can take the CDC and put it in the CAN for all I'm concerned.
I'm with you. It's worthless, useless. I mean, all the lies, the alleged war on cancer, all the crap that they've approved through the FDA that's supposedly suitable for ingestion. I mean, you know, we could do hours on this. But anyway, yeah, this is truly a grassroots effort, and with you, Cliff, and Jan, and others leading the way, there will be progress made. We're, of course, here with you all the way. You're going to get the attention somehow, some way, I think, when so-called important people either get it or their family members get it. And do you have a sense, Cliff, about the spreading of this disease, this condition? Is it intensifying, or is it staying stable? I know it's very difficult to ask you this because we really don't have good stats, but what are your feelings?
Well, yes, you're right. We don't have good stats, and so we're going to go on intuition here, and my intuition tells me it is coming big time.
Okay, we're talking pandemic.
Pandemic. It's already out there, Jeff. I highly suspect that the majority of the people in this country and perhaps in the world are already infected with the organism.
Did you just say the majority of the people in this
country?
You
got it, boss. The majority of the people.
How do we think the infection vectors are how are they getting infected?
Person-to-person transmission is one of the ways that it's passed, and I will bet the farm on that one.
I'm with you. Hey, all body fluids. If this is in the body, it is being vectored through kissing, through sharing of food utensils, through all kinds of methods where body fluids come into contact with body fluids. And it may not even require body fluid transmission as an active vector. It could be dry contact. We don't know.
Absolutely. This thing can spread through a variety of means other than body contact. I believe that it's spread, possibly spread through the air. It's possibly spread through ingestion. It, you know, these fibers are found on food all the time.
Right.
In the grocery store, you name it.
Wait. Oh, hold on. You've identified Morgellons fibers found on food?
You got it.
We're going to talk about that when we come right back in just a couple minutes with Cliff Nicholson. All right, hold on. We'll be right back. Wow. Okay, right back with you. Our fourth special on Morgellons with Cliff Nicholson. Jan Smith will join us in just a few minutes. Cliff, the idea of a pandemic, of course, being thrown around all over the planet with the bird flu H5N1 and so forth, I join you in calling Morgellons a certainly budding pandemic, if not already a pandemic. Pandemic, by definition, suggests an entire coverage. And in this case, we're talking about every continent on the planet already covered. So it does fit the at least incipient form of the term. And what I'm looking for here is communicability, vectors, how it's transmitted. Some people live with Morgellons sufferers who do not get it, at least not overtly. Now, that's not to say they don't have a subclinical case and they are fine for whatever reason for X number of years. We don't know. But tell me about this issue of Morgellons fibers being absolutely identified in food.
Yes, a trip to the produce department can be a real education for somebody that knows what they're looking for, especially in the produce, Jeff. I haven't done a lot of work in the meats departments or in the packaged foods. But one trip to the produce department was enough to chill my jets. The stuff's everywhere, absolutely everywhere, especially on your leafy greens and things like that.
Really? Now, we've got five or six primary colors, as it were, of Morgellons fibers.
Right.
How many different colored fibers are we finding? All of them?
The primary. The primary colors, of course, are red and blue and then some black. But interestingly enough, there are a whole series of subcolors. You'll find yellow. You'll find a bluish green, almost a green. I found almost a goldish color.
Now,
and of course, brown.
How do we know they're the same Morgellons fibers? What are the characteristics for our listeners? What are the characteristics that you see in those samples that are identical to Morgellons sufferers fibers that they pull out of lesions and other areas of the body that are infected?
Well, you'd have to have a microscope to really tell the difference.
I understand, but you're convinced through your personal microscopy, your knowledge of same, whatever,
right?
Our medical team that's working with us, that they're the same thing.
Absolutely. I know this pathogen. I know its incarnations, and I know it when I see it.
Well, you're its number one enemy, if anyone is. I mean, you are on fire with hate for this thing and carry it so incredibly bravely, as does Jan and all Morgellons victims.
Well, I'm fixing to get this thing one way or the other.
I know you are, my friend, and you got a partner here and a lot of people listening, so we're going to work on it. But I just am appalled at the idea that this is in food. If it's in food, that suggests at least two immediate scenarios. Number one, this is a bioweapon, either intentionally deployed or it got loose and it's all over the place. Number two, it's an off-planet organism that's here and is doing some real dirt. Or number three, it is some kind of a mutant issue of something that was possibly constructed in someone's lab at some point and is out there. Now, I don't know. That's two and a half, really. That's not three. But we've got something that is, if anything, growing to be more and more perplexing, more and more mysterious all the time, isn't it?
Absolutely. And what's very alarming about this is the fact that it's not only pandemic in humans, but it appears to be spreading in the entire animal kingdom.
How could it not?
Absolutely. And one of the vectors, back to the subject of vectors, is insects. It also attacks insects, but I've got a long case file of reports from people who claim that they originally got their first case of this, or the first manifestations of it, through insect bites.
Insect bites being just one. I mean, what you're suggesting here is that we can go to the store and buy some vegetables, make a salad, go home and eat more Gellin's fibers.
You got it. You can get bit by a bed bug or a mosquito or a spider and get more Gellin's. You can shake hands with the next door neighbor and get more Gellin's. You may be even able to pick up a rock and throw it and get more Gellin's.
Jesus, this stuff is, excuse me, it seems to be spreading all over the surface of the planet.
You know, it is everywhere, Jeff. It can be found. I catch it in sticky traps all the time outside.
What's a sticky trap?
Well, that's where you take, and you take a piece of tin and you coat Vaseline on it, and you hang it outside in a tree.
Okay.
And wait to see. We used to catch insects that way.
I got you.
Yeah.
So now
and
we're catching more Gellin's fibers.
Yeah, exactly. And you can hang cotton filters up in the tree, and you can catch them in that. You can go out, and this is kind of fun to do if any of the listeners want to go out and do this. You go out and look in spider webs, and you'll find them. Now, not in all spider webs. Interestingly enough, some spiders are better housekeepers than others, but in certain kinds of spider webs, you'll just find tons of them.
You know what, and I know you've probably lied there awake many, many, countless nights thinking about the potential. I think your mind, among everyone I've talked to, is at a level that probably examines this through at least as many scenarios as anybody could, and then some. This, man, let me step out on a little bit of a limb here. If this is crawling all over the planet now, it arrived recently. That's my sense of it. Do you agree?
Absolutely.
Okay. I don't believe this came, frankly, from some chemtrail sprayer, although I can't rule that out. Seems to be something else. It's proliferating so much and has spread so far that either it has been spread by some other means, maybe it came in and drifted through the atmosphere, or it is literally transporting itself and crawling its way around the globe. I don't know where else to go with this. And if that's the case, and if all life on this planet is open to infestation, what if this gets to a certain point where, and we do believe it has consciousness, and I'm going to put quotations around that, of some kind, and I don't think we're going too far with that, do you?
Not at all.
If it does have a collective consciousness and does take over the planet, at least in terms of being ubiquitous in its presence and its infectivity, or certainly its inhabitation of living beings, what if it's deciding one day that, gee, we don't need these hosts anymore. We've got the place here. Let's just either reduce them to a small, manageable number or eliminate them.
Well, stranger things have happened, and I'll tell you, I'm right with you on this, Jeff.
Is that something you've thought about?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And another interesting thing, we might have mentioned it once before, is the old situation with the parasite that actually controls its host, controls the host's destiny.
Well, yes, a successful parasite does not kill the host.
Right.
An incompetent parasite kills the host. This does not seem to be incompetent, does it?
No, I think it's learning as it goes. Believe it or not.
Collective consciousness of a non-terrestrial origin. Can't dismiss it, can we?
Nope, we cannot.
Whew. Right back with Cliff and Jan Smith, and prepare for the next jolt from Jan. Okay, and back with you. Now, Jan Smith is back with us tonight as well. She's a Morgellons victim for 8 years. Former educator of emotionally disturbed children, she suffers from the classic Morgellons symptoms. Discovered the non-healing ulcerous lesions on all parts of her body were filled with strange colored fibers. And motile, M-O-T-I-L-A, that means mobile, as in moving, as in self-propelled, white fibers moving under the surface of her skin. These made marks looking like scratches, and she was diagnosed with delusions of parasitosis. The lesions, a product of her own self-excoriation. Please. She was offered psychotropic medication, a tube of skin cream, and an admonishment not to pick at herself. Jan's experience holds much in common with the vast majority of Morgellons victims. Not only do the majority of the medical professionals refuse to help them, but by doing so, they are themselves agents of great emotional duress. Searching the internet, Jan found others with the same symptoms with identical stories. It became apparent there were thousands of people all over the world condemned by the medical community to dwell in the same living hell. Her photos on my website at rents.com speak for themselves. She is back with us. Hi, Jan, once again.
Hi.
All right, you heard Cliff and I talking about this issue, and the issue of intelligence and the sense of many of the victims of Morgellons, that they are being inhabited by something of intelligence, is something that I guess works for you too.
Yes, it really does. The one thing that I often wonder is if something has mutated since the beginning of some point, if something that man has put into the atmosphere has caused a triggering of something that was always here to activate. That was just one of the things that Cliff and I have run by each other before. We use each other as a sounding board pretty often. We've come up with some real interesting scenarios, but none of them seem too weird with this disease.
No, I think we can underscore our whole conversation. None of the scenarios, none of the issues we've discussed are really too weird. They're what they are, and it's all possible. Everything's on the table right now. All right, you had a knee operation. A year ago, was it, the first one?
Yeah, the first one was a year ago, and I knew I had this disease at that time, but no one in the medical field made any notice of it. I think that they were looking in my files thinking that I was delusional, but they would gladly operate on my knee for $35,000. I'd operate on my own knee. But
I would have done it for you.
I could have done a better job. But they did, at the end, they did have some work done, you know, the cursory lab stuff that they do on anything that's removed from a human being, and it said fibrosis. And I, at that point, asked the doctor what that meant. And he goes, oh, that doesn't mean anything. And people do have types of fibrosis, but this fibrosis I knew was Morgellons because when they sewed that lesion up after they had done the implant, it was 6 inches long, and I had fibers growing out of it. I knew they were coming from someplace. So it was
the
a pretty
fibers
good...
came right out of the incision line.
Yeah, they sure did, and they have a tendency to come out there. They almost look like fishing wire in the way that they have almost a polymerase look to them, but they have a curved end, and what this tends to do is kind of make a rolling circle on your leg, and it starts a lesion. This polymer will go around and around, and the next thing you know, there's a lesion in this stuff where it's woven itself into a circle. Yeah, and I had a couple of lesions on my legs from this last surgery that lasted up to 9 months. I finally just got rid of them on that leg.
How did you manage to do that?
I almost hate to say on the air because it was really nothing that I would ever recommend anybody do. But
let me tell you, I'll bet you basically removed the lesions yourself?
No, actually, I didn't. I had a leaning toward using copper sulfate, so I mixed copper sulfate with some skin medicine, Silvadine cream that I had. And in mixing the copper sulfate with it, the copper sulfate literally will turn this pathogen black. It's like something I wouldn't recommend to people. It's only good for topical use, and it really doesn't do any good in the overall internal parts of the disease.
Copper sulfate is also used in ponds to kill algae.
Absolutely. And, it's always been a thought of mine that, this is my own theory, and I've been waving this around for a long time, and, nobody's on my bandwagon, including Cliff, but that's okay. But I liken this to the Oomycetes school of water molds, which is not really a mold at all, but more like in the seaweed family. Mm-hmm. But horses get this terrible disease called pithiosis. Mm-hmm. Makes great big lesions on them with draining fistulous tracts. And most of the time, the only way they can get rid of these on a horse is to actually cut them out if they can find them early enough. And a couple of friends of mine had gone to doctors early on with the same disease, and they had been diagnosed with pithiosis. That's not a disease human beings get.
Right. Okay. All right. So let's talk about your latest knee surgery, the second knee replacement.
Okay.
The doctors know by this time that you've got something weird because they told you about it after the first one. So did you know?
Well, they said it was fibrosis. Now, to them, that was like I don't know why fibrosis is okay to be in your knee instead of cartilage, but in my case, since, you know, I have DOP written in my files, apparently that's all the explanation I should have needed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I knew that I was having the other knee done, and I knew that probably the cause of the deterioration of my knee was this disease in the first place, that I decided to, you know, mention it on your program, and, you know, only by luck did somebody hear that program and actually come forward and say, you know, I'm a doctor, and I'm willing to do this work for you.
Right.
And, you know, I choose to remain anonymous with this because apparently in the medical profession, people do know that there is something going on with this disease.
Right.
And they know that there are things that they should not talk about unless they want to be harassed by the medical boards and whatnot. There's an undercurrent of knowledge about this disease that's out there, but people don't talk about it.
Okay, so you went in for surgery. Tell us what precautions all of a sudden were tossed around you.
Okay, well, I went into the surgery, and by this point, the surgeon had spoken to this other doctor that was going to take the samples, and apparently their credibility was so great with them because this is a really well-known and famous doctor they put me, after the surgery, they first put me in a semi-private room with someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I was in there for about an hour,
mm-hmm.
and this whole entourage of people came into the room, and someone leaned down and whispered to me, "We're taking you out of here." And I thought, really? And I mean, it's like I was pushed out of the room in the bed with the chair that I had sat in and everything I owned. And I mean, I was kind of cleaned out of there like a whirlwind and stuck into a little room around the corner that was a private room. At that point, they posted signs on my door that said alert, and then it said gloves and gowns must be worn at all times. And there was another sign that said the visitors must check in with the nurse before they could go into the room. And when I was in there, everyone that came into the room had to put on a big yellow gown and gloves before they were allowed to enter the room. And before they could leave the room, they had to deposit those in a hamper right at the corner by the door. So everything that they wore went on when they came in and went off before they went out into that hallway.
Cliff, we can't rule out aerosolized transmission of this either by a sneeze or a cough. So perhaps in the future, people going into medical rooms where someone is diagnosed with Morgellons will have to wear full frontline respirators as well.
Absolutely. And one of the more, I believe, one of the more contagious forms of this thing is a mucus form, an aerosol that you, you know, if were you to sneeze, it'd be in mm-hmm. your saliva, in body fluids.
Well,
extremely contagious.
For those of you who don't know, the average sneeze expels 50,000 particulates of aerosolized saliva, carrying blood cells, virus, bacteria, mold, yeast, fungus, you name it, and it goes at about 100 miles an hour, anywhere from 6 to 10 feet out. So a sneeze unrestrained is pretty amazing in its dynamics. So they took your old knee out, and you, again, Jan, just to make sure people didn't miss that, suspect that Morgellons caused the, at least accelerated, the deterioration of your knees.
Well, I did, because a lot of people have a wearing away of the cartilage in their knees.
Sure.
But I had an absence of cartilage in my knee.
Like,
I mean,
it was consumed
on my X-rays,
by something?
On my X-rays, it was just bone on bone around the whole knee.
Had you had serious injuries before?
No, I had not.
Okay, all right. Do the fibers show up on an average X-ray if there are enough of them? Do we know that?
No, we don't, and I'm going to say no because I had, I'm not sure if it's the same thing, but I had a mammogram about a year ago, and when I went in for the mammogram, I actually had a couple of good-sized lesions on
mm-hmm.
my breast,
mm-hmm.
and when I went in, I had some of the self-sticking Band-Aids, they're all adhesive,
right.
On my breast, and the nurse said to me, you know, you need to take those off so that we can do the mammogram, they might show up, and I said, I have these lesions on me, and, you know, please wear gloves, and please, whatnot, when you, you know,
mm-hmm.
they have
mm-hmm.
to kind of position you on these slides before they take the photos, and normally they don't wear gloves for that. When they did the mammogram, they said my mammogram was just fine, so I was pretty amazed at that.
Well,
so I'm guessing that X-rays may not show them up.
Okay. Well, my position on mammograms is don't.
Yeah.
What in the world do people want to x-ray their breast for when they're already in trouble with all the toxins in our food and everything else? Anyway.
Ordinarily, I wouldn't have, but I had that lesion there for a really long time, and it was a concern of mine. I could not get it examined as a lesion for Morgellons disease, but I knew that I was having a steady stream of fibers coming out of it, and I thought, if nothing else, maybe they can see something that's going on with this disease. And I got to
understand. I did
pragmatic
report back
that it was just fine.
Fine. Good. Well, that's good news. All right. Back in just a minute with Cliff Nicholson and Jan Smith, our fourth special program on Morgellons in just a couple of minutes. All right. Right back with you. Our fourth special program on Morgellons with Cliff Nicholson, Jan Smith. We have a special guest we're going to shortly in Australia, a sufferer down there. There is so much to this mystery that is imponderable. We go out there, all we can do is run scenario after scenario, and there are so many of them that it becomes daunting. But you don't hear any of that in Cliff's or Jan's voices. These are true heroes, great human beings, and all of us are in this together, whether we have it now or not. As Cliff said, he believes that the majority of Americans have been exposed to it. Whether they develop active cases or not, we don't know. It could well happen in time, though. When you go out on a... Let's just play this game, Jan. I'm going to get back to your surgery in a minute. But, Cliff,
sure.
you go out on a date, Cliff. Male, female, female, male, whatever. You don't know what those people have in terms of STDs. Now we have to think about Morgellons.
Right.
Don't we?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And your point about shaking hands with a neighbor. You know, the Japanese are a lot of things, but they're not stupid. They bow.
That's right. That's
so
right.
Something I would certainly condone.
One of the things I'd like to add right there on the shaking of hands, of course, we know that shaking hands is one of the major ways to pass a lot of things, but this particular organism does have a fondness for the nasal cavities and for the esophagus and down into the lungs. And so if anybody puts their finger to their hand or to their nose or to their face and then down the road shakes hands, there's a high probability they're passing this thing along.
Immediate inoculation to
the other end. And under the fingernails, too, Jeff.
Oh, so nail biters rejoice. Jeez. All right, Jan. So they took your knee out, and lo and behold, what was the report of what was inside your knee joint?
Well, that's the thing. We don't know yet. I don't know if old habits die hard, but my knee sat in pathology at this hospital for a whole week. I phoned there because the researchers said, you know, I'm waiting for these samples. Where are they? And they hadn't done anything with them yet. I don't know what the problem was.
Well, maybe they didn't want to.
The researcher then decided to make the call, and things were expedited, and 19 samples were sent to this researcher. And from what I gather, these samples are now being looked at various labs in the country. They were not all taken to one place and given to one person. So it's going to be a while before the research results are in, because they're all going to be examined in very thoroughly in many ways. So I'm waiting to hear.
Jeff?
Yeah, Cliff, go ahead.
May I ask Jan a question?
Sure, please.
Jan, I wasn't aware that they were sitting on this for a week. What was their reason? Now, this has happened before, hasn't it?
At the hospital, you're saying?
Yeah.
When I called the lab, they didn't know what they were taking samples of, and they said they were waiting for the bones in the knee to calcify, which had nothing to do with what I was looking for. But anyway, the researcher was then willing to call them, and you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Nobody had ever taken samples for this, and they didn't know what they were doing, essentially.
Do you think there's any apprehension there?
At the lab?
Yeah.
I would say so, really, because they didn't know what they were looking for, and it was an unknown thing, and they were handling the materials from my leg, so...
you do it.
I
you do it,
so.
Fred. No, you do it, Mike. No, Steve, how about you doing it? No, so it sits there for a week. Nobody wants to do it. That could have been part of it. We don't know. All right.
I just wanted to add the end of the story for you, because here's the complete irony. I was in the hospital for 3 days. I knew I was going to go to a rehab afterward. On the third day, a administrator from the hospital came to me and said, You're going to stay here an extra day because we're still looking for a nursing home slash rehab center that has a single room for you. So I stayed at the hospital another day. They then transported me to what I would have to call a home for old folks with a small rehab room, and I was placed in a room with a 91-year-old lady with diabetes. And all of a sudden, you know, all of these great strides forward that I thought I had made with this disease, just, you know, just one more time when my hopes just got dashed for having anyone recognize this. But what I have looked into and since found out was that once I left the hospital that I was at and was transferred, mm-hmm. these decisions were made in the hands of my healthcare administration people. And they did a little tiny bit of research on Morgellons and decided that they didn't have to worry about a thing.
Cliff, if these samples go to enough labs, and Jan is under the impression they are going to go to a number of labs, might we actually... Two things. One, the labs certainly would seemingly be capable of rising to the challenge of trying to identify something that would be a mystery to them. And two, if they find something that is not politically correct in the medical community, Jan might never know about it. We might never hear about the results.
And that's been the case in the past, absolutely. Now, I have a great deal of faith in the doctors that she's dealing with. I've known them for some time. However, I have very little faith in general when it comes to the labs. Unless the doctors are there giving specific instructions, these folks, you know, number one, generally tend to be by the book. They can be incompetent in any kind of a extrapolative situation. And number two, they're corrupt, a lot of them.
Okay. Jan, 8 years into this,
yes.
this situation, describe your overall health and welfare year by year. I don't want each year, but what's the trend?
Well,
down, down, down? Are you on a hold pattern because of your tremendous will and heart? What is it?
The first couple of years, I went through what Cliff had described before, is you originally get the disease and you have this big flare-up and it seems to get better. Then you go into your second phase of this where this disease comes back again and you know you have it. And then is the time when I believe that you begin to really make all these adjustments in your life, and I mean literally the entity is present. I mean your energy sucked, and your whole lifestyle has to take a shift because you realize that you're sick and nobody's going to help you. I mean, one of the most terrible things about this disease is that when you go to a doctor, you're begging for help and they're kicking you. I mean, you know, they're kicking you and calling you names, and they're negating all of the credibility you had all your life and calling you delusional. I mean, every single day I would take I used to use the all-adhesive Band-Aids without the gauze on them because I was so paranoid about thinking that some of the materials from the gauze was in there that was the fiber, but it wasn't. And I could take these total healing Band-Aids off that were totally adhesive, and every day I could look at them under the microscope and just see strands and strands of things and red glowing dots of some kind of material that seems to go with these,
right.
and it doesn't appear to be blood. It's like a red glowing protoplasm.
I understand. Look at Rents.com, please, under the Morgellons featured story box. Look for Morgellons victim Jan Smith photos. Look at her pictures. Understand what we're talking about here. Okay. There is an issue of honor and honesty and morality.
Mm-hmm.
When dealing with our fellow humans, there are a lot of people who have HIV/AIDS, who have hepatitis C, who do not curtail their lifestyle, their social activities in the least. They don't want to lose their good times. They don't care. That's how selfish they are. I call it murder if they pass these diseases on, and they are passable.
Yeah.
They are vector diseases. The same could be said, I'm sorry to say, but you've thought about it, both of you, for Morgellons. This is an issue of potentially, if not mandating, certainly urging people who have it to not isolate themselves, but certainly take on, as you have, Jan, at least the outer surroundings of trying to warn people. You've got to be responsible when you have a communicable disease of any kind, whether it's influenza or hepatitis C. It doesn't matter. This is so weird, though. Cliff, what kind of guidelines would you suggest for people who have this? How paranoid do they have to be? How much do they have to isolate themselves? Do they have to quarantine themselves? I mean, should they shake hands with people? What should they do? Should they have sex with people? Should they kiss people? What are they going to do?
That is a really tough one.
That is a tough one.
It's a tough one. I recommend extreme prudence. I believe that we're dealing with something that has the potential to infect a variety of people actively as well as subclinically, and people need to adjust and relate to the surrounding world with that in mind. We have a situation, too, where, unlike AIDS, which is recognized, we don't have the advantage of official recognition. So we're sort of caught in a very strange limbo, which is just yet another thing about this disease that is so extremely bizarre.
Okay, well said. We'll pause on that note. Lots to think about. When we come back, we'll meet someone in Australia who has Morgellons. Or does Morgellons have her? Her name is Jillian. She lives in Melbourne. She has suffered for several years with it, and we'll talk to her as Cliff and Jan and I continue in our fourth special report on Morgellons. Okay, right back with you. We're going down to Australia. Cliff and Jan are with us as well. Jillian, I believe it's Penkethman. Is that it, Jillian?
Oh, that's lovely, Jeff. You said it perfectly.
I did?
Yes, you did.
What do I win?
You want a hug or a handshake?
Thank you. I'll take it. I don't care what you've got. I'll take it. Melbourne, Australia is Jillian's home. She has suffered for several years with Morgellons, and now the more severe neurological component of it, which we'll talk about. She supports other Australians coping with this, as she describes it, soul-destroying syndrome. And I think we'd all agree that it certainly can do that. What a horrible thing to shoulder. She'll work with anyone seriously interested in researching Morgellons and only wishes to find out the truth. That's what we're here for tonight. Her hobbies are music, Reiki, cooking, baking, writing, dancing, and Sally, her cat. Any concerns about Sally getting this thing, Jillian?
Look, to be honest, Jeff, yes, I was at the start. When I say the start for me would be when I fell upon the Morgellons website for a name to put to my symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
And
when was that, Jillian? Approximately.
Approximately, I think, November 2004.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah. So yes, I was very concerned, and for a while there, she wasn't too good. She did show some signs in her coat and in her behaviour, and she still, I think, whatever it is affecting her mentally. I can't explain it.
I understand.
I've lived with animals all my life, and you know your own animals, and something's changed, and I can't explain it. No.
Well, something's changed, and that's something to be certainly concerned about. Are there any tests you can do on Sally to find out? I mean, I don't know what good it would do to find out. Maybe it's best not to go looking. But
well, I did that. My vet was good enough to do all the up-to-date HIV tests because I had a cat that had died from that, so it was a big fear for me.
Right.
I didn't want to lose another cat at a young age. And we did all that, and we did antibiotics, and she came really good. And now, she looks so damn healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And she's on a great diet where I'm even considering jumping in the bowl with her
for her food. Oh, good. Okay, so when you found the Morgellons website on the Internet after suffering suffering from this for a couple of years, I can't imagine what the emotional impact must have been for you to find all of a sudden verification that what you had was real and other people had it. That must have been incredibly emotional.
It was. And to be honest, Jeff, it was the answers to all my prayer. And it was a weekend, and I can remember it specifically. And immediately I found the number for the health department, and they had a hotline number.
Mm-hmm.
Not a hotline, an after-hours number. So I phoned that, and I told the lady, I'm phoning you to tell you I have the symptoms of Morgellons disease and or Elliott's disease. Never heard of it. So I was fobbed off, and that was it. And recently, I've still been contacting the health department.
Uh-huh.
But
they don't have a clue?
They're aware of it because it's been in our newspaper.
Beyond that, they're not going to get involved much, it doesn't sound like.
Well, his answer was, we can't do anything until the CDC make an announcement.
So they're beholden to the CDC to give them in Australia guidance?
Yes, yes. That's kind of, I don't know whether that's an excuse. I don't know the whole, the proper reasons,
Isn't that pathetic to hear, Cliff Mickelson? Isn't that pathetic to hear, Cliff and Jan, that the Australian medical and health authorities are sitting on their duffs waiting for the CDC to tell them, yes, there's a disease here, or yes, there is a disorder called Morgellons, yes, it's real, so here's what you need to do. What happened to initiative? What happened to truly protecting the public health? What happened to the Australian medical infrastructure? This is
well,
weird.
Jeff, the arm of the empire has a long reach.
Sure does. Sure as hell does. All right, Jillian, you call this soul-destroying. Your soul sounds very much like it's healthy and hearty, and you have a great will and a great interest in doing your best to help with this. You've been helping other people. I guess you've run across others who haven't been so spiritually guided as you are to stand tall and stand firm in the face of some horror like this. There are other people who just wither away. What happens?
Well, look, to be perfectly honest, I have only spoken to, off the top of my head, say, three other people with this in different areas of Australia. And, there is one other young woman who's very spiritual, and she's hanging on to that and her kinesiology, but she's living a very lonely life and, being turned away from a doctor because she refused to take an antidepressant.
It's sickening.
And really, we're all just sort of being forced into a corner on our own.
And we talked about this earlier, is the urge to self-isolate or quarantine oneself or retire with their antidepressants, I guess it's there. You start to feel, you use the word shunned, you start to feel tainted, damaged, unclean. Do you get that feeling?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. All right, stand by if you would, Jillian. We have to take a break. We'll come right back in just a couple minutes as we continue with Cliff, Jan, and Jillian. And what wonderful people. And all of you out there who know anyone with Morgellons, I hope will spread the word. And even if you don't, all the more reason for you to spread the word. And all the information is on the net now. You just got to do a simple search. You can go to my site if you'd like, rents.com, and scroll down to the Morgellons special feature. Click on that, and there's a whole data page. Just look for data files at the bottom. There's tons of stories. It's all there. Be right back. Right back with Cliff and Jan and Jillian in Australia. Jillian, what is the, and we've been through this before, but I want to hear your definition of it, severe neurological component of Morgellons?
Mm-hmm. My definition? Seizures.
Seizures?
Yes.
Seizures like really? Grand mal seizure?
Yes.
Really? Cliff, is this common?
Well, there are a number of reports of similar things like that, Jeff. There's a foot drop, all kinds of physical reactions.
So wherever the fibers are, these things can manifest. It doesn't matter. I mean, all sorts of different things can pop up.
This thing can do a variety of tricks.
Wow. Seizures
tricks.
Are not tricks, yeah. Well, seizures are no joke. How many seizures have you had, Jillian?
Lost count.
You're kidding.
Lost count.
And these
these
are grand mal seizures where you are down and out, totally out of control and in danger.
And the strange thing is that you're fully aware of everything that's going on. But with myself, I can't speak and I can't open my eyes. And I have no control over my limbs. And couple of weeks ago, I have very low blood pressure naturally, but this is lowering my blood pressure. And I fainted in the kitchen and hit my head on the wooden cupboards, and we've got a hard slate floor, and I banged my head and went into a seizure. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can really hurt yourself. I've also got the drop foot. My right side is what is affected with the neurological symptoms. It's I mimic a stroke quite often, and my body will lean to the right, and it's even curved my spine to the right with all the swelling and infection in the skin. It's damaged my hearing. It's given me glue ears. How I feel, it's given me the glue ears. If you can imagine putting a pencil in each ear, mm-hmm. and holding it and twisting it, that is exactly what it has done to the skin.
Good God.
And to the point where, I don't know why it happens, my hair grows into my face, and I know this happens to Judy Smith, it happens to Cindy Casey.
Be more specific, please, Jillian. What do you mean? Your hair grows into your face.
The hair on your hairline, or what falls down onto your face, it will tickle your skin.
Yeah.
And it'll touch the skin.
Yeah.
But it's actually going into the skin.
You mean the hair on your head is falling down like you have bangs and it's growing into your skin?
Oh, yeah. Yes. And from the top of my head on, you know, just above my forehead and the sides of my head, what I think is my hair growing from there, but they're the ones that do the tickly movement. Now, I'm not grey, but I do have some grey hairs coming through, but I have grey hairs that grow at a very fast speed. But there's a difference between these grey hairs and, say, my grandma's grey hairs, and she's 90. These ones look like they've been crimped with, you know, hair crimpers.
I understand.
And they're longer than the rest of my hair. And this happens all around my hairline. It's this unusual.
Is it up into your hair as well, or just at the hairline approximately?
It's more so at the hairline. Where you would have, like, your glands, this loves to sort of get into your lymph glands, your main glands, and just sort of sprout from there and work its way.
Did you have, Jillian, an awareness of your normal hair being co-opted and kicked out by usurpers, these fibers, these false hairs, faux hair, as it were, Morgellons hair? Did you notice that happening?
It did more than that. To the, you know, when my hair was lovely and long, and I would put it up in a pigtail, my hair would actually sort of move, and it's, what is happening, and tickle my face. Then I was losing too much hair, to the point where I had lost that much, I had to shave off what was left. And, you know, now what's grown back, I don't like what's grown back. It's very dark, it's very unusual.
Has it covered? Has it given you good coverage? What grew back? Do you have good coverage now?
Yes, I have good coverage.
But most of it is not your own hair, apparently. It's something else.
I don't think it is at all. It's very strange.
If I might interrupt here.
Go ahead, Jan.
Yes, I don't know if you recall a couple of shows ago, and I'm sure Cliff is chomping at the bit. We have literally pulled hairs out of our arm and face and
I remember very clearly.
And all of a sudden we see something that's not a hair at all, and
correct.
Cliff has named this macrofiber. And this is something that has moved into the hair follicle and totally replaced the hair. And they're really easy to identify under a microscope because the hair roots usually become distorted and twisted in a different direction. The hairs are much thicker and sometimes they split, and they do drive out the normal hair. And maybe Cliff would like to speak to that.
Please do, Cliff.
Well, that's absolutely correct, what Jan has described and what Jillian is saying, too. She's right on the money. This is another form of this affliction. It's not the colored microfibers that we're talking about, the red, blue, and black fibers that are the more sensational aspect of this thing. These are the macrofibers, and these are a primary, Jeff, in this affliction, almost a larval stage, if you will, to use a comparison. Although it's not an exact comparison, and that is what you're dealing with right there, is the macrofiber.
Good God. And the hairs coming down her face, her bangs, whatever, that are not her hairs at all,
all over the body.
Are apparently trying to root in a new location.
This thing not so much consumes the host as it replaces the host.
Science fiction.
That's for sure. That is for sure.
My goodness. Every time we do a program, it gets to be stranger and stranger. Head of hair now that is not her own, for the most part. A head of hair that actually can move on its own. A head of hair that reaches out hair by hair, which they're not hairs, they're fibers. What do you call them, Cliff?
Macrofibers.
Macrofibers.
Yeah.
And they look, apparently the tips of them look for a place potentially to root into.
Well, they're very, very similar. To the untrained eye, one couldn't really tell the difference at first to a regular human hair. But they are not a human hair, and they will invade the host, host's follicles. It will kill the occupant that's in there already and eventually replace it.
This is so unbelievable. Do most Morgellons people lose the hair on their head? I know Jan talked about the hair on the arms and so forth.
My hair is thinned on my head considerably. And I'm fortunate because I have not experienced the same symptoms with the other hair growing in on my scalp, and I just feel so fortunate because it sounds like a terrible nightmare that Jillian's going through.
Hi. I'm running out of words. Hold on. We'll take a break and come right back and continue our fourth special program covering the Morgellons nightmare. Talking to Jillian in Australia. Jillian, when you first began to deal with this issue, did you have the usual skin lesions, of course, and that wouldn't heal with coverings that were made of fibers and fibers coming out of them and all that?
Oh, yes, yes. Look, I was covered head to toe. And, I went and saw a doctor because I had what I thought was an abscess on my breast, and he had turned into like an open ulcer lesion, and he had a look at it with his microscope, and he plucked some he said, oh, they're very deep, very fair blonde hairs in there. And he said, when you go and see the dermatologist, you let him know I plucked from their very deep, fine hair.
Mm-hmm.
So I told the dermatologist, and he says, don't worry about it.
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, uh-huh. don't worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
But
now, I should also mention here, going back to our original program with Cliff and Jan and talking about these lesions, how they don't actually become infected. They're not infected in the sense that we know bacterial infections. Are they, Cliff?
Yes.
No, what happens, it's very interesting, but you can tear yourself to ribbons, Jeff, and you'll never get a secondary infection. And that's been just documented time after time by large numbers of victims. And they just tear themselves right to ribbons, and a secondary infection.
Now, what does that suggest? It suggests to me immediately that these fibers will not stand for any bacteria to compete with them or potentially harm them. It's their turf, so get the hell out. You're not welcome here. So we got no staph, no strep, no other secondary bacterial infections.
And a rate of healing that's phenomenal. And when you tear open a lesion and you're working on it and you're just tearing it apart, getting in there, whatever. It might bleed like crazy for a little bit, and the next thing you know, the darn thing looks like it's just like you never touched it.
Jeez. Jillian, you agree with that?
Oh, I have to laugh. I have to laugh because I agree so much listening to Cliff, because, yes, it bleeds so much, but you need it to because of the pain. You have to get that release of pressure, and then, lo and behold, wake up the next day, it's, oh, they're gone. How did that happen? It's incredible. Incredible.
Have you run across anybody in the medical establishment in Australia who is on board with us yet and recognizing this as a serious crisis of a potentially enormous worldwide magnitude?
Yes, but I think to the point where they're just walking with blinkers on. They're aware of it, and they've seen me. And that's as far as it's going. And, to the point my doctor says, oh, yes, I seriously believe there's an infectious agent involved with what you have. Well, my answer, I felt like saying to him, but of course I'm too scared, why don't you phone the health department then? He's had other patients front to him, and he tries to send them to one hospital, and they send them to another hospital, and they'll just end up like me, where you have to go into a psychiatric inpatient hospital
mm-hmm.
to prove to those people you have a physical illness. And I had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I was thrown out after 2.5 days, which was good, because they said you don't need to be here.
Right.
But that totally destroyed me for the next 12 months. It haunted me. And I don't deserve that. Nobody does.
I wonder if there's any way to find out, Cliff and Jan, how many Morgellons patients the average GP or dermatologist is seeing these days.
And misdiagnosing.
Of course.
A lot.
We did hear one doctor on a radio program make the comment, and he was an advocate for the DOP diagnosis, that he had 100 patients of his own that had DOP, and proudly said that. And I just thought, oh, my God, you know, if one doctor has 100 patients that have DOP, and maybe five of them actually could possibly have that actual disease, and the other 95 don't, then how many people are treating another 100 here and there? Because these people all go into hiding. They're ashamed. You don't want to walk up to your neighbor and go, and by the way, I'm delusional. You can tell people that you have almost anything, but if it's a mental illness, that's a shame.
So you quarantine yourself because they tell you you're crazy. That's one thing. And then if they tell you you've got Morgellons, which is some science fiction disease that is probably eminently transmissible, you have to quarantine yourself on those grounds, too, if you have any real, I guess, responsibility. I don't mean quarantine yourself, lock away, but certainly quarantine your behaviors to an extent, modify them.
You know, I think it's only been in the past year that people have realized the transmissibility of this, and it's only because of the Internet and being on chat boards and having people say, and I have children that have this, or I have a new boyfriend, and now he has this.
Oh, you're getting that, too.
Yeah.
See, there you go. Okay,
absolutely.
That's what we talked about earlier. And I.
Absolutely,
oh, man.
But I think we were all isolated for so long, and for a long time there weren't multiple people in families that a lot of us knew about, so that we were just thinking, you know, I'm the only one that has this, and I won't give it to anyone. And now I think in the last year we've all really had to stop and go, wow, I really could give this to someone, because we have learned more about it. We didn't know about the body fluids in the beginning.
Right.
In the beginning, we were just fighting to have recognition that we weren't crazy. Nobody was doing any physical exams on us at all, and we could bring fibers in by the basketful, and no one would literally look at the fibers. I hope you don't mind if I segue over to this, but the article that Clifford just wrote, he used my skin for that. And I didn't know if you were aware of that or not, but... When Clifford Connercom looked at those things in the microscope, he was really appalled, and he said, you know, he's a lay person. He said, if myself as a lay person can get a decent microscope and look in this and see actual things budding on human being skin, why hasn't a doctor seen this by now? And it's like no one's looked.
Unbelievable. Well,
I mean, it's appalling.
It is beyond. Again, I really run out of words. Clifford, if you're right, and if Clifford Connercom is right, and if Jan is right, and if Jillian's right, and if we're all right on this, and this is growing exponentially, in a few years, you may not be in the minority. And you may not be in the minority now. We don't know.
Right. We're not in the minority now. It's just that most people, it's subclinical in a lot of people. It hasn't flowered in its full capacity yet, which it will. And the number of cases out there that were misdiagnosed, and so people who think they have shingles or some other thing like that.
So this does represent, apparently, as herpes lesions, herpetic lesions.
Similar.
Now, here's the real rub, Jeff, is that this thing starts to rewire its victims as well. So you're going to have an increasing amount of chronic fatigue out there, diagnoses for all kinds of things similar to that. Mental aberrations that begin to surface as this thing rewires itself.
Oh, the antidepressant industry will love it.
Oh, you betcha.
Are there any... Let's be a little paranoid here for a minute. I'm a normal American. I'm a normal Brit. I'm a normal Aussie. I'm going out and having a good time. If I see somebody with a lesion I'm going to be a little concerned. But most of the time, you probably won't see the lesions. What do we look for? How do we try to check out potential partners, potential friends? What do we look for? This is getting to be like profiling, and it's not healthy. But it is a health issue, and we need to be objective about it. So let's start first with Jillian. You've been saddled with this horror for years now, several years. If you were going out in public and you didn't have this, knowing what you know now, Jillian, A, obviously you'd be concerned, but B, what would you look for?
that's a hard question, Jeff.
I know it is.
Look, if I can use maybe my nephew for an example, who's been exposed to me since he was a baby, and now he's 12 years of age, he has changed, his features have changed. Genetically, of our family, he should look a particular way. But there's characteristics I see in him that frighten me. For instance, he's developing these moles on his neck, like freckles, but they run in a line.
Uh-huh.
And, I knew you guys would go, because that is what this thing can do. It will mimic, it will copy. And, Samuel, he had some unusual little things when he was younger that nobody could explain. They thought he was going to have Tourette's, but he didn't. It came and it disappeared. And then there was some skin problems and,
Okay.
It's frightening. It's frightening.
All right. Well, it is indeed. All right. We just have a minute or so left. Jan?
Yeah?
How would you answer that question? What do people look for, whether they have it or they don't? I mean, pretty soon we're going to have more Gellin's Victims Clubs. What are we going to do?
I really don't know. I mean, I liken it to the AIDS virus when people have HIV and they
Correct.
Really don't know it. And, if you see one of those Kaposi sarcomas, all of a sudden, it's a big clue. And it's kind of like that when you see people with these lesions. The lesions do have a distinctive look to them, and they're non-healing, and usually they have a center that looks like it's got a viscous fluid in it a lot of the time. I would know what one of those lesions looks like because I've seen one every day.
I'm sure.
Usually when they heal, they leave a white spot. It's as if they take all the melanin with it.
Really?
In your skin. Yeah,
that's correct. Yeah, you're right there, Jan.
So the melanin's gone, and just
it's
a white spot.
It's gone, and you'll see people with, if you see people with white spots all over their arm, and they're not really big scars, they're just like white spots, it's a pretty good indication they've had some lesions that have come and gone.
Yeah, and that'll show up in the sun, someone with a tan, a lot. There is, Jeff, one other way that you can tell someone that has this disease. It's pretty easy. You look at their nostrils, and someone with this disease, if it's in an active stage, will have, a great majority of the time, is going to have tiny, tiny flaps of skin, what look like skin, I should say, extruding from their nostrils, right on the very edge of the nostrils.
Really?
And if you know what to look for, you can see it. It's real easy to pick up.
All right, Jillian, we have to go. Thank you so much for being here. Keep up the good and the very brave work you're doing down there. We'll probably talk to you again in the future.
Thank you so much, Jeff, for the opportunity to be on your show and keep up the good work.
Well, I'm honored. Thank you.
Jan, bye, Cliff. Bye, Jan.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Jan, thank you, dear, very much. We'll talk to you again sooner
Jeff,
rather than
thank you
later.
Thank you for everything. You have been a real champion for us.
Well,
I appreciate it so much.
I'm really pleased to be able to do anything. And Cliff, I salute you, sir. You're an amazing human being too.
Well, Jeff, just once again, I can't do more than add to what everybody said. You're the best in my book.
Well, thank you. All right, we'll do this again. We'll keep right on it. So take care. And thanks to all of you for being here. We'll be back in 21 hours.